We'd like to share with you on this cassette some very helpful material we felt taken from three recent Focus on the Family broadcasts. Let me provide you with a bit of background that I think will help you understand what you're about to hear. Some months ago, Dr. Dobson invited into our Focus on the Family studios five women who were either working mothers or mothers who had deliberately made the choice not to work. And as you might guess, the topic of discussion was, what effect does it have on children and on families for mom to leave home during the day and take up a career outside the home? We had those that felt that it had very little effect, at least negative, and others who felt that it had a considerable effect on family life. We explored it together, and then as we aired on our broadcast excerpts from that 2 or 3 hours of roundtable discussion, Dr. Dobson always finished each broadcast with some summary observations about what the ladies had said. So you're about to hear material that was pulled together for three broadcasts, including those summations, that really, I think, does a very good job of attacking the pros and cons of women working outside the home. With that as background, let's listen in on the material chosen for day one of this three-part series. Dr. Dobson, we're devoting our program today and for the next several days to the important subject of working wives, and specifically how their jobs affect their families. And a good place to begin, I think, would be by quoting a portion of an article I have in front of me from the Wall Street Journal. It's written by a Joanne Lublin, and the dateline is Morton Grove, Illinois. Quote, "Their teachers call them latchkey children. As young as age 6, they wear house keys around their necks and stay by themselves after school until mom or dad comes home from work." She says, "The growing number of unsupervised youngsters in this middle-upper-class Chicago suburb distresses Barbara Blonds, a 35-year-old mother of two. So the energetic League of Women Voters president has asked her chapter to study Morton Grove's need for a daycare center. But Mrs. Blonds doubts that the project will succeed. You see, she has only 20 active members, half the number available 8 years ago." Mrs. Bond says, "I know what we should be doing as a league and how little we're doing because of lack of members. Everybody has gone back to work." Close quote. Well, I have a feeling, Doctor, that that observation by Mrs. Blondes is being repeated in towns and cities all across the country.
There's no doubt about it, Gil. More than half of the 84 million women in this country are now working outside the home. And it's my understanding that that number is steadily rising, and the social implications of that change are no less than profound.
Well, there's been an endless stream of articles and editorials and television programs on this role of women issue.
Yes, there have.
But how about you summarizing for us what you think is behind this movement of women into the workforce?
Gil, I think the most important factor in the motivation of women appears to be economic. People give different reasons for why women are going back to work, but I really believe that the number one factor is that it takes a lot of money to survive today, especially with the standard of living we've come to expect, raising children, clothing them the way we want to, taking the vacations we want, the materialism with which we surround ourselves. That costs a lot of money, and it takes two salaries to do it. And, of course, the pressures of inflation have compounded all of this problem, the financial problem. So one of the primary motivators, if not the most influential, is the desire of women to earn enough money for the family needs as they perceive it. But secondly, in my opinion, and probably more important from an emotional perspective, is that women seek jobs for reasons related to self-esteem. And I'm going to express a bias here. In fact, the whole program will represent my bias, as much of what's said here does week after week. But we've never claimed to be objective, have we?
No, that's right. Opinionated, yes.
Wrong, yes, but not objective.
Not objective.
I think we have stripped the homemaking responsibility of its dignity and respect in recent years, leaving those who are raising small children at home to ask, what am I doing here? And who cares? And is it really important? And I've got to get out of here and find myself.
You often speak out about your feelings about the role the media has played in this undermining of the responsibility of wives and mothers.
I think you'd have to be blind not to be aware of the steady bombardment that's been flung in the direction of the homemaker, the housewife. So much so that that word housewife has derogatory connotations now. And women, when you ask what they do, they almost have to explain, well, you know, I'm just a housewife.
Or they say, I do nothing.
Yeah,
yeah.
With a little smile. Because they know that the position they're in has no longer is respected in society. Gil, that is our greatest mistake as a nation.
Well, we're beginning to sound like all women ought to stay home and raise children.
I don't feel that way. Certainly not. And we're not in a position to make that kind of statement. And I would not be so presumptuous, Gil. I don't like to see anybody get on a soapbox and tell everybody else how they're supposed to live their lives. And there are many exceptional circumstances among women and their families in this country that ought to be considered before you make any kind of blanket recommendations of that nature. Some have husbands who can't work. Many are divorced. Many are in a kind of situation where they just absolutely have to work, if not for financial reasons, for emotional reasons. And when I said in the introductory comments at the top of the program that we were taking a sympathetic look at the role of women, I really mean that. We're not here to throw stones at those who are working. But I am saying that the story being presented by the media is distorted and lopsided. The story that everybody who's not doing that is somehow out of step with the times, that they're being cheated and shortchanged and taken advantage of, and that they ought to be angry. And most of all, they should get that monkey off their back and get out and do what's really important. That's what concerns me. There are millions of women in this country who have young children who desperately need their mothers and their fathers, but who want to devote their lives to those kids and raising those children, who want to be a homemaker, but they feel under enormous pressure to get a job and a career so they can be like everybody else.
I'm thinking of the taping of one of our television programs of Focus on the Family, thinking of a woman who said, who stood up and said on this subject, I feel tremendous pressure from my neighbors, the women
that.
In the neighborhood,
yeah.
to be out and get a job. And she said, I don't want to. I'm thrilled and satisfied to be in my home. But she said she felt so much pressure that she had actually considered moving because of it.
To get away from it. We're vulnerable to that kind of social pressure.
What are the implications of the working mother on the marriage itself?
Well, Gil, there's quite a bit of evidence now that there is a connection between working women and the increase in divorce, which we've seen in recent years in our country. Although, to be honest with you, there are differences of opinion as to just what that association and relationship is. Let me just give you my opinion on that subject, that the most common cause of divorce today, and I've said this repeatedly, we even did a whole program on it, the most common cause of divorce is an outgrowth of the breathless lifestyle that leaves husbands and wives exhausted, too tired to talk to one another or pray together or take walks together or have sex together or be in love together. And certainly if there's one consequence of having both parents employed, it's this phenomenon of routine panic, which I've described.
And obviously that kind of routine panic is more probable in a home where both parents are committed outside the house 40, 50 hours. And those 40 or 50 hours can take the best energy a person has to offer.
It can. And the research also shows, Gil, that most working women come home to a great deal of housework at night. It's idealistic to say husbands should help, and some do. You know, it's fair if both are going to work that they share in the evening work. But the truth of the matter is it still rests on the back of the woman, largely. And so she comes home tired from maybe 8 hours of work, maybe some overtime, maybe pressures there, certainly pressures there. Living involves pressures. You put 30 minutes or 45 minutes or an hour for lunch in there, and then another hour going and coming. Maybe she's been gone 10 hours. She's got to come by the store on the way home and get the groceries for the dinner and bring it home and cook it and clean it up and try to be with the kids, get involved in family life, hopefully bathe the baby, read a story to the older kid, pray with the kids, get them in bed. You know, that for a woman to do that once is one thing. For her to do that 1 week is another thing. To do it for a month is another. But we're talking about a lifestyle. We're talking about a pattern going 5, 10, 15, 20 years, carrying that kind of responsibility. And I'm here to tell you, there is not that much energy in the human body. Now, some very strong women can take it and do it and fulfill the physical aspects of that for a time. But something gets shortchanged. The emotional aspect of marriage is one of the first things to go. Perhaps the emotional interchange between parent and child is also likely to be sacrificed. And the physical health of the individuals involved, you know, there's just many consequences to trying to jam that much into the bag. And there are multiplied millions of people across this country that are trying to do that.
Well, we talked about how a working wife can create stresses that sometimes lead to divorce. The truth of the matter is, though, that many working women are already divorced.
Yeah, Gil, and I think we ought to add a little disclaimer here that there's something about this discussion that bothers me to this point, that the implication is that the divorce is the woman's fault because if she hadn't gone back to work, it wouldn't have happened anyway. And this is a problem for husband and wives. This is not just a woman's problem. But it is true that many working women work because they are divorced. Listen to this statistic. In 1970, now that hadn't been that long ago, 2.9 million women were the heads of household in their homes. Now it's 5.2 million. It has doubled in the last 10 years. So you see there is a relationship. The two trends of the increase in divorce and the increase in working wives do go together, although the cause and effect relationship is still speculative.
I almost get the impression that the traditional family, as we think of it, dad who's a breadwinner and mother who stays home as a homemaker and the two kids, is a vanishing species in this society.
Gil, that's not really true, and I wouldn't go that far. And in fact, I have been, I think, suckered into believing that in the past, as have a lot of other people. There have been occasions on this program where I have quoted the statistic that's going around our country now, that says only 7% of the families have a mother who remains at home, a father who works and supports a family, and two children. And that's a startling statistic, and we talked about that at one time on this program. And that figure was thrown around during the White House conference on the family, I think, by feminists and others who want to discredit the needs of the traditional family and imply that it's a thing of the past. But I looked behind that figure to find out what it really means and where it came from. And what it really means is that 7% of the families in this country have a father who works outside the home, a mother who remains at home, and two children, quite literally. If you have one child, you're not in the 7%. If you have three children or four children or five children, you're not in that statistic. If you have children who are grown and gone, but that you're dedicated to your wife and love her and have committed yourself to her, you're not considered a traditional family. So it was a manipulation. I feel like we've been had when we throw around this thing of 7%. The truth of the matter is that we still have 75% of the family that live under one roof and are related by blood, adoption, or marriage. 75% of the families are still traditional. But those families, even that 75%, are changing and they're under additional stresses, and that's what we're talking about today.
I think it's obvious that that point is pretty well documented, isn't it?
And Gil, this brings me to a related point that I've been thinking a lot about lately. As you know, you've heard me say time and time again, even on this program, that overcommitment and fatigue and time pressure represent major barriers to meaningful family life. But I'm realizing more now that the pace at which adults run is necessarily the pace at which kids run. You know, there's a family train coming through town and it's going 80 miles an hour and you got two choices, ride it or don't ride it. That's as adults. Children don't have a choice. They ride the family train. And whatever speed the family train goes at, they go at, even when they're very young. They go through the preschool years being jerked back and forth and hustled here and there. And when their parents run, they have to run too. Where the parents go, they go. And I've been there and I know what I'm talking about and what the effect of this is on young children. I remember when our son Ryan came along, it was a very busy time in our lives. My first book, Dare to Discipline, came out in 1970, came out in September of 1970. Ryan came to our house in August of 1970. And so all of the pressure of that new book and the attention, the phone calls, the requests, the speaking engagements, all of that hit me at the same time that Ryan came along. And for several years, we were just hustling, hurrying, trying to jam everything into the bag. And when he was 3 years of age, we had reached this maximum pressure in our family and home. Shirley was in Bible study fellowship, and she was preparing lessons, and she was calling women and trying to lead them to the Lord and all this involvement. And then I was so committed at the hospital and university. And one day, I was hurrying to get someplace, and I was putting Ryan's shoes on. He's 3 years of age, 1973. And I'm trying to get these shoes on, and I had no idea that I was communicating something to this toddler about my stress. And he looked down at me very calmly. He was sitting up on the counter, and I was working with these shoes. And he looked down at me, and in his toddler way, he said, "Are we in a hurry again, Dad?" And it was as though you'd picked up a hammer and hit me between the eyes. And I said, "Yeah, Ryan, we're in a hurry again." And millions of other toddlers are observing the same thing about their parents. But it doesn't stop in the preschool years. If anything, it gets worse. It gets more intense.
Have you given any thought to what is produced in the emotional development of young children by that kind of pace? What does that do to kids?
Well, that's a vitally important question, and one that I've been giving a lot of thought to. You know, what do we do to kids when we rush them through the developmental years in this way, where they never have a chance to breathe or swing on the swings or just walk along doing nothing, which everybody needs to do, especially in childhood? And as I've thought about that, it's almost coincidental that yesterday someone sent me a book, complimentary. It's called The Hurried Child, which is directly addressed to this subject. The subtitle is Growing Up Too Fast, Too Soon. It was written by Dr. David Elkind, who is a child psychologist. He's chairman of the Elliott Pearson Department of Child Study at Tufts University in Medford, Massachusetts. He said that growth into personhood in our contemporary society takes time, and it cannot be hurried. As we know it, growth occurs in a series of stages that are related to age. Each stage brings dramatic change in intellectual capacity, in emotional attachments, and in social relations. The elaboration of these new capacities in all of their complexity and intricacy is a slow and deliberate process. When children are pressured to grow up fast, important achievements are skipped or bypassed, which can give rise to serious problems later.
I wonder what type of problems he has in mind. What's he thinking about?
He says here, hurried children seem to make up a large portion of the troubled children seen by clinicians today. They also include many of the children who have chronic psychosomatic complaints, such as headaches and stomach aches, who are chronically unhappy, hyperactive, or lethargic and unmotivated. These diseases and problems have long been recognized as stress-related in adults, and it is time that we looked at children and stress in the same light.
Not only are those words powerful, but take a look at the cover on that book. That must be about a 10-year-old girl who has the makeup and the hairstyle and the dress and the jewelry of about a 20 or 25-year-old, which carries a very powerful message.
Those stony brown eyes stare out at you,
yeah.
Don't they?
Let me bring you back to the subject of the day, though. It almost sounds as though we're talking about overcommitment. We're really talking about the working mother. How does this all fit together?
Well, that issue was addressed again by Dr. Elkind, and I think very well. Listen to what he says. He said, "What about the mother who opts for a career and a family? The number of working mothers in the United States has increased substantially in the last few decades," and that's the point we've been making today. "For many women, work is a gratifying and fulfilling experience, and many find that if they cannot have it all, as Betty Friedan said they should, they still can have the best of the work and wife-mother roles. Nevertheless, judging by the outpouring of books and magazine articles recounting the tribulations of the working mother, many women are finding work stressful. Women, far more than men, carry the dual burden of professional work and housework. A recent study showed that in 1965, men averaged about 9 hours a week doing household chores and caring for children. 10 years later, men were spending 9.7 hours a week in such activities. Women, in contrast, spent 28.8 hours per week in housekeeping and child care activities in 1965 and 24.9 hours per week in 1975. Do you hear that, Gil? Read between the lines. Working women have now jammed 35 or 40 or 45 hours into their schedules to accommodate a full-time job. but have only reduced their home commitments by an average of 5 hours per week. That means stress. That means overcommitment. That means exhaustion. That means fatigue for everybody involved. Dr. Elkind continues, working parents, particularly mothers, are of necessity more stressed by time constraints than are non-working parents. In such families, the children have to adjust to parental schedules rather than the reverse, as is usually the case with a non-working mother. The children must be awakened early, dressed, fed, and taken to the caretaker, daycare center, or nursery school. Arranging carpools is time-consuming, as is picking up children and dropping them off. And there are always those irresponsible parents who are habitually late, forget the schedule, fail to show up, and so forth. Then he goes on to say that older children in homes with working parents in turn must learn at an early age to fend for themselves. But demands and expectations can get out of hand, however. It is not always easy for working parents to separate what is reasonable from what is not. If a child can start dinner, then why not have him prepare the whole meal? If the child can keep his room tidy, then why not the whole house? The temptation to pile heavy domestic burdens on the child is strong for parents under stress. Helping parents is one thing, but taking over their jobs and responsibilities is quite another.
Well, we're talking about the fallout of the pace at which we live, specifically a two-career home, and what it does to children, and I guess we're saying that it can be tremendously destructive.
It can be destructive, Gil, but I want to add a little disclaimer here that children are unique individuals, and some do thrive in the same environment where others wither. Remember that boiling water that hardens an egg softens a carrot. And stress is like that. It can either destroy us or edify us, depending on how it's received by the individual.
I think I'm raising three carrots. Let's turn a corner at this point in the discussion, shall we? And maybe address some specific comments then from you to listeners who find themselves in varying situations in regard to the working mother. For example, speak directly to the woman who's listening to us who is working outside the home, but she doesn't want to be. And she identifies with what you're trying to say and, as a matter of fact, feels a little guilty about what she's hearing from us today. What are you saying to her?
Well, let me address that specifically, Gil, and I appreciate you bringing it up. Because I'm really giving two messages here. One is that I know that woman exists, and I've talked to her, and we've got to be understanding of her and sympathetic of her. And there are ways to help her cope. And, you know, she's in a tough spot. In many cases, it's not her choice. Economically, she has to do that job. But my primary message here is in terms of the theme of the media in recent years saying that everybody ought to do that. You know, that it's a bandwagon. Let's all get on board. Now, if we want to go over onto the other side of that coin and talk about those who can't do that, then I don't want to be guilty of throwing stones at them, making them feel guilty, because they already feel guilty. And they're doing the best they can. And there are circumstances in all of life that are less than ideal. And you just stiffen your back and you clench your fist and you do the best you can with it. And so that's another subject and another matter.
All right, here's a second woman who's listening. She doesn't have to work, but she really wants to. Now, whether she's heard the message of the media and been duped, or maybe it's a little nobler situation. She's just not fulfilled being a mother or being a wife alone. She likes it, but there's something on the inside of her that wants expression beyond it. She doesn't have to work for economic reasons, but she really badly wants to.
Okay, Gil, I can't dictate to her, obviously, but I can make a recommendation to her based on my perspective. And it grows out of this factor. One, children remain small for a very short time. The years are flipping by. They'll be gone before you know it, and certainly they'll be in school before you know it. And while they're in the formative years, if you can possibly keep it together emotionally, I would recommend that they not work more than part-time, to be home when the kids come home, to be able to devote something of their time, effort, and energy to those formative years.
Let me just get to the third woman real quickly here before we run out of time. Here's a listener who doesn't have to work. She doesn't want to work. She loves being a homemaker. She loves being a mother. It's her choice vocation, and she's thrilled with it. Are we saying anything to her?
We sure are. We're saying don't let the influences of the whole world change you from that perspective. You're doing the most important job in the universe.
What are the implications of what we're talking about on our country?
Well, that is the third category, which we need another hour to talk about, Gil. And I just want to kind of speculate about that for a second or two. I see all kinds of long-term implications for a country that has begun to devalue the family. That's the ground floor, the foundation. Everything sits on that. Our government, our institutions, our way of life, everything. And I would like to call our attention back to the importance of children, the family, and the home, and then allow the individual to make whatever decision they have to with regard to work.
Why don't you establish the background for a very special broadcast we have ahead of us today?
Well, Gil, one of the most fun things we do is to invite four, five, six, seven, eight people into the studio who have something in common and get them to talk about that commonality. And it hasn't been too long since we invited five women into the studio who are either homemakers and are raising children at home and are very, very dedicated to that task, or are career women, or at least women with jobs, women with careers. And we discussed the issue of the working woman, and it was a fascinating discussion, and we're going to hear a portion of that conversation today.
We plan to share excerpts of really two or three hours of conversation with you today as well as tomorrow. So with that as background, let me take you back several weeks in our Focus on the Family studio to a roundtable discussion featuring our host, Dr. Dobson, and five mothers.
Gil, our listeners may not agree with everything that they hear today, but nobody's going to sleep. I guarantee you that. I'm reminded of a bumper sticker that I saw the other day that said, "I'm neither for nor against apathy." And there's going to be some strong feeling that comes out of this program. Today we have five women here. The home team is on my left in red jerseys, and the away team is on my right in blue jerseys. And Gil and I have on black and white jerseys and whistles.
Maybe a good place to begin is if you'll introduce the guests who've joined us.
Sounds good. Let's start right here on my left with Betty Rigdon. Betty, you're married, aren't you?
Right.
How many children do you have?
I have three. I have two girls that will be entering high school this fall and a boy who's 10 going to fifth grade.
Bonnie, tell us your last name.
Graham.
Just like that. How many children do you have?
I have three children. I have a boy 15, a girl 12, and a young son 5 going into kindergarten.
And what does your husband do?
He works for Atlantic Richfield Oil Company.
And who do you work for?
I work for my family.
Of course. Judy?
I'm Judy Berry.
And the number of children?
I have two children, Brad and Kim. Brad is 13, Kim is 11.
And you work for?
I work for Pasadena Unified School District.
You're a teacher?
Yes, I am.
What grade level?
I work with last year, grades 5, 6, 7. I'm a site coordinator in the MGM program. I work part-time, 40% assignment.
And the MGM stands for Mentally Gifted Minors.
Right.
You work with the bright kids.
Yes.
All right. Cheryl, tell us about yourself.
I'm Cheryl Beal. I have two children. Kim is 13 going into high school, and Jay is 10 going into fifth grade.
13 going on 16.
Right. Right. 19, I think.
And you are working or staying home?
I'm employed by my husband.
Staying home and working, aren't
right.
you?
Right.
Linda, tell us about yourself.
I'm Linda Talbert. I have three children, 15. She's a girl going into high school. I have a 10-year-old going into fifth grade, and he's a boy. Hmm. And I have a 5-year-old little girl going to first grade. Hmm. And I am a teacher. I work with the ESA. I'm an ESA resource teacher dealing with 5th, 6th, and 7th graders.
Okay, let me tell you what motivated this session today, because I think we're going to talk about maybe the most important issue that we could possibly discuss in a session of this nature, dealing with the role of women today. As I've said on this program in the past, and I'll probably say it many times in the future, everything traditionally feminine has been challenged. Everything that constituted the role of women has turned upside down. And I find that many women, both inside and outside the Christian family, both those working and those staying home, have reason to question who they are and what they're doing and whether that's what they ought to be doing. And even from a Christian point of view again, what does God want for me? And just the role of women, I think, needs to be brought to our attention, and we need to air it, even if we have some differing views on it. Now, I received a letter just not very long ago, just about a month ago, from a man named Roy Kniveton,
I believe that's the way you pronounce his name, and he said this: Dear Dr. Dobson, I enjoyed listening to your broadcast on working mothers today in Boston. I cannot tell you how much this issue has been discussed in our household. We are Christians with a three-year-old son. My wife and I both work and go to school part-time. While we are generally satisfied with the amount of time we spend with our boy, she works part-time and spends most afternoons with him after nursery school. The majority of religious discussions we have heard on that subject include arrogant condemnations of any mother who would work outside the home. This view discounts reality in which one income often cannot support the family. I do hope you will explore the issue further, especially bringing women on the show. It would be ludicrous, and I agree with this, and I'm sure you would too, Gil, for us men to try to solve their problems without first seeking their input, and especially talk to Christian couples who have found practical solutions to these dilemmas. Please bring onto your show women who have come to terms with these problems in their lives and can offer practical solutions without preaching or condemning, and that's you all. And that's what you're here for. Betty, I'm going to start with you. You said that you are not working full-time now.
That's correct. I left full-time employment about 5 months ago after working 13 years as a secretary.
And now you're not working at all?
5 hours a week, if you want to count that as employment.
And I am your employer,
right.
So I actually know that. Now, that's a major change to make in a life. You worked for 13 years,
right.
And now you're only working 5 hours a week. What motivated that change?
Well, actually, it was very unexpected when it happened. I would like to say that until 4 years ago, I was a single parent and therefore didn't really have a choice. It was necessary to work. I had one daughter. When I was married, it just seemed the way we're living, it isn't worth it. There is no time. Our children are almost gone. My daughters will be entering high school next year. It seems like yesterday they were going into kindergarten. And all we are doing is existing from day to day to week, and there's no time for anything.
There's just that pressure of living that made you want to quit.
I don't know what other type of situation can offer such daily pressure as two people in one house working full-time and trying to do everything else that you have to do. There just are not enough hours in the day. It leaves you both exhausted. Your children aren't receiving what they deserve from you. So at this time, we decided we would just reorganize our lives. I would like to say that it's not an easy thing to do when you depend on two incomes, to all of a sudden decide you're going to eliminate one. But we found that it can be done, and it doesn't hurt quite as bad.
Are you losing your mind sitting at home with nothing to do?
Oh, my goodness. No, there are so many things that I've always thought, if I didn't work, I would do this. And the kids and I are starting our first summer together. This is the first summer I have not had to find a place for them, find things for them to do while I was off, call home 5 times a day to find out what's going on. And we're going to have a ball. My husband and I have already been away twice, and we're in the second week of June. So it's good.
All right, now, Linda, you're working full-time. Have you felt these same pressures? And if so, how have you coped with them?
I think when mom works that everybody has to bend a little bit. And if my family could not bend, and if my husband was not a very flexible person and was a type of a husband that did not help, then I'm not sure that working would be worth it either. I derive personal pleasure from teaching. I think that's where God wants me. And that took a lot of soul searching. You know, it's just like the gentleman said, you know, society really comes down hard on a Christian society comes down hard on the mother who leaves her family stranded and goes into the working profession, right? So that when I realized that at the end of the day, when I wasn't working, that I really yearned to have that personal satisfaction. When I started looking into those motivations as to why I was feeling that way, I came to the conclusion between God and Gary and myself that that was
that
my niche.
That was best for you.
Yeah.
Are you implying then that you did not have personal satisfaction by being with your children and seeing them develop and you can see them? For instance, the other day, I was listening to some song on the radio. Was Kenny Rogers was singing, I Believe It. She Believes in Me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Kim and I were just standing in front of my dressing table, as a matter of fact, and she said, She said, "Oh, I like that song, Mommy." And I said, "You know, Kim, don't ever marry a man that you don't believe in. Huh. Believe in him,
mm-hmm.
because that'll make the difference in his life if you believe in him." And I went through this whole thing with her and had maybe 15, 20 minutes to go through this with her. And it made a difference in her life.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think she'll forget that. And if I hadn't been there, I wouldn't have had that chance to do that.
And you're there full time, aren't you?
And I'm there full time. Yeah. See, the thing is that that I feel so much satisfaction in seeing my children, in my molding and shaping them, and being there to catch these little things
at the time
when they need me. I'm home. I used to be a school teacher, too.
Mm-hmm.
I taught school, and I also got a lot of satisfaction because I taught high school, and these were kids. I was very young, just out of college, and I got a lot of satisfaction from working with the high school girls and seeing them develop and all. But I have more satisfaction
seeing
my own family develop than I did somebody else's kids.
Well, of course. You know, of course you get more satisfaction out of seeing your own children
mm-hmm.
develop.
I know, if I may break in, one of the schools that I'm associated with is the school that Linda teaches at, and I have known Linda for years, since college.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that the gift that she has to communicate with children and teachers is a very special God-given gift. And at this school, if she were not there on specific days, there is love that would not be given to those children had they not received it from her.
I'm sure that's true. I'm also sure that when I was teaching, that if I hadn't given a certain love to those children, they wouldn't have gotten it either.
Mm-hmm.
You see, in my opinion, it's kind of a trade-off. Do I use the love that God has given me to give? And do I put it with the children at school that I would be teaching? Or do I concentrate that love on my homemaking to create an environment in my home where I can encourage my husband to be the man God wants him to be? I have the time to listen to him instead of being tired out from giving at school. I can encourage my children to be the people that God wants them to be. I can encourage my friends, because I get phone calls constantly, counseling type phone calls constantly, giving out love to people, being available to people.
Which you couldn't do if 40 hours a week were going into a job.
That's right. I'm sure that Linda is very, very useful where she is. I don't question that.
Judy, let me ask you a question, and this will go to Linda, too. I wouldn't call you career women, but at least women with careers. Do you kind of feel that the Christian world is either thinking or saying insulting things because you've chosen to do that? You get kind of tired of being sort of accused, even if they don't verbalize it, of not giving the proper attention to your home and family?
I don't feel that for myself.
Linda?
Well, I do. And I aired this about 2 years ago to you. I sort of feel like the Christian society wants their cake and eat it too. You know, I think that Christian society prays that their children will have Christian teachers when they go to school. And that Christian society pray that when their kid breaks the arm or is in a very serious accident, it's going to lay him up in the hospital, that he'll have a Christian nurse or a doctor that'll tend to that.
There were at least 100 women that I could have invited here today, and I've invited each one of you. You're very carefully hand-selected, whether you know it or not, for two reasons. One is because of your Christian faith in each instance, and secondly, because you are emotionally committed to one of those two positions on this issue that we're talking about and have strong feelings about the role of women. Bonnie, you're no exception to that. We haven't heard from you yet, but I happen to know that you are very committed to the role of a homemaker.
That's right.
And I'd like to know why.
Well, I enjoy being the homemaker. I feel like it's the most challenging position available to women today. I don't feel like I could go to any office or any situation that would give me more of a challenge, more of a chance to fulfill myself, and more of a reason for living than in my own home.
You don't have trouble with fulfillment?
Not at all. I really don't. I have trouble with fatigue often, but not fulfillment.
Sitting watching television all day?
I don't know where men get that image. No. it is very satisfying for me. I enjoy my children. Their attitudes, their new insights on life, their reasoning abilities as they begin to shine forth, and all the activities that are influencing their lives, I'm watching and I'm helping create, and I'm stimulating them. I'm feeling like as I pray, I'm praying that I will be the mother for them today, because God knows what they need in the future, and I don't know what they need, but He can make me, through me, give them what they're going to need in the future for the background.
It's been my observation that there are not very many women alive who have the energy, emotionally and physically, to get up in the morning, take small children, and get the diapers packed and put it all in the bags and get everything ready, get the husband off to work, fix the breakfast, clean up the dishes or stack them or something, run out of the door, take the kids to the babysitter or the child care center, run off to work, work all day long, maybe 9 hours by the time you have an hour for lunch and breaks or what have you. Come home, run by the store, pick up the food for the dinner, bring it home, go into the kitchen, fix it, clean it up, then start all the homework process with the kids, get the baby into the bath and get them all into bed, and somehow at that point have enough energy left to interact with your husband, whether sexually or emotionally or what have you, and still meet some of your own emotional needs, and not do that one day. But do that month in, month out. I don't know many women that can do that for a long period of time, just year in, year out.
I think we all have things in our past that haunt us. And one of my saddest recollections, and we laugh about it now, I don't laugh as loudly as everybody else in my family, at the time when Barbara, my daughter, was only 4, and she went off to Humpty Dumpty nursery school, and every morning I would fix her a sausage and egg sandwich, and she'd take it wrapped in a piece of tinfoil at 6:30 in the morning to eat at nursery school. It breaks my heart. I can't help it. These things hurt. Because if you're not there, kids aren't going to come to you and say, I have these emotional needs, and I want you to meet them now. Or this afternoon, such and such came up and you weren't here, but let's talk about it now. They don't do that, because if you're not there, they learn to be quiet because they know you're tired. They know you're tired. You're telling them you're tired. You're telling them, I'm busy. I've got to get dinner. Don't you see what I'm doing? Children learn to adjust. They certainly do. They stay out of your way.
Something,
and they don't talk.
But on the other hand, if you are sensitive, and if before I go into the valley of the pit,
5 o'clock,
you pray a little bit, you know, the kid that you would have maybe said before the prayer, now don't you see that mommy's busy? Now go off and whatever, play with the kitty. You know, if you're sensitive, and if you realize that it's going to be the valley of the pit, and if you realize that you are tired, and so that you won't feel guilty as a working mother to work through those things, you know,
you can't work from 8 till 5 every day and then get in the car and drive home and say, now I know all these things. I know all these things. I'm going to be perfect and wonderful and superhuman. Something goes.
That's very idealistic to think that way.
Really?
And when you're on the rush, on the freeway at rush hour, and you're thinking, I'm going to be model mommy when I get home, that's a neat thought. But sometimes, I'm sorry, you don't care. There's nothing left to care.
But for the mother that has to work from 8 to 5, she may be the sole supporter. I'm very concerned that we not leave this hanging so that the mother feels guilty. Because one of the times I communicate the best with my 13-year-old is when I can rub his back at night before he goes to sleep. Mm-hmm. And I'm home then. And whether I work or not outside the home has nothing to do with it. That's when Brad talks to me.
Let's see, the whole message that I hear coming from the two ladies who are working, Linda and Judy, is that, yes, it's more difficult. Yes, those are problems. Yes, those are dangers. But it is not necessary to fall into that trap.
That's right.
I have in front of me an article from McCall's magazine, February 1979. It really is a very stimulating article by Ellen Goodman called The Changing World of the Full-Time Housewife. And this is the sub-headline here, heading. See what you think about it. Bombarded from all sides by the press and TV, by her friends who have jobs, sometimes even by her husband and children, she feels forced to apologize for being just a wife and mother, which makes her boiling mad. Mm-hmm. Have you ever felt that way as a homemaker? Have you ever felt a little defensive about it?
I'm sure on occasion, you know, it hits you wrong, or maybe it's said wrong, but in usually if people say, do you work? I say yes, and they say, where? And I give my address, because I do work. It's maybe a different way. I'm not reporting to a boss. My boss would be the Lord. I go to the Bible a lot for consultation and advice.
Cheryl, how about you? Have you ever felt that the world was saying to you that if you're willing to settle for that responsibility of being a homemaker, that you're really kind of dumb? Or
yes,
you wouldn't
I
put
feel
up
that
with...
very often, and it really upsets me. It really does anger me. I believe very strongly that my job or my role in this earth, most important thing is to make my is to be a helpmate suitable for my husband. That includes making an environment where he can be the man that God wants him to be. But I believe that I am to create a home environment for him and for the children. That doesn't just mean staying home doing maid service, doing laundry and ironing and cleaning house. It means creating an environment for them where they can grow and they can be the people God wants them to be. I'm to listen. I'm to understand. I'm to be there when my children need me.
See, now, but that statement to an audience makes it sound that my home isn't.
No, I'm not saying that.
And that, and I think that's what has to be, you have to be careful about.
Mm-hmm.
Because the only thing that means, that if a Christian couple decides that the wife is going to work, then all that means is that they're going to have to maybe work at it a little bit harder to make sure that that comes about.
Mm-hmm.
But if a couple who is committed to God and the mother working,
mm-hmm.
then it's just something that they have to deal with together, mm-hmm. and they will make it happen.
Okay,
if it's important.
I agree with that.
I think what Cheryl and I are feeling is that to be a homemaker, it is not synonymous with being unfulfilled.
You're right.
I would like to make a comment on the subject of going out to work to fulfill yourself. If I had a job like Judy's or like Linda's where I really felt something like this, I may feel differently. But the majority, the vast majority of working women have dull 9-to-5 office jobs where they go in and nobody appreciates what you do. I have, in the 13 years I worked, on very few occasions had anyone come up to me and say, I am so glad you are in this office. You are a tremendous asset, and what would we do without you? I would like to interject something here. I regret, I no longer feel guilty, because that's different than regret, mm-hmm. that I did not have the opportunity to raise my daughter from infancy. I couldn't. But it occurred to me not too long ago, if I continue working at this pace and our family is just going and going and going without time to really breathe, am I going to regret that 10 years from now? I mean, who cares if I was a career woman for 40 years? But these short years that I have, and every year that I have a birthday, I realize that they are short. At 20, life is not short.
Mm-hmm.
Life is forever. But at 30, it's getting a little shorter. And when I'm 40, is it going to be shorter still? And am I going to regret? Do I know these people that I lived in the same house with? They have 4 years of high school left. And if I'm off somewhere during all this time, are they really going to even remember anything I did other than maybe buy them a new bedroom set or we took an extra vacation this year?
Judy, you feel that same urgency about your kids growing up and every day that you're not with them is a day lost?
No, I don't feel that my children have missed out on anything because I have worked part-time. I feel that their lives have been enriched because there have been areas of my job that I can take home to them. And it's been fulfilling to them to know that I'm a teacher and that they hear the stories of some of my children, and I still have contact with a boy that I was his third grade teacher, and he came from a Christian home and he soon knew I was a Christian. He is now in med school. Mm. He calls me on Christmas, on vacations. He comes to see me. Mm. He gave me my first bottle of Estee Lauder perfume. he had a crush on me. I made an impact on his life, and it was because I used a gift that God had given to me, but not to the abuse of my own family. Yeah. I still feel that my children, I have not neglected my family because I have been working.
Now, I need to raise a very important question here among you all, because our listeners are thinking it, and I've heard it many times, and you have too. Respond to it, especially those of you who are in a housewife response, in a domestic engineer response. I cannot get that word out of my vocabulary. What about the criticism that if you build your whole life around your children and around your family, and your children grow up and they hit the teen years and they suddenly don't want to be mothered anymore, or at least not in the same way, and then you have trouble turning them loose because they're too important to you emotionally, and they go out into the world, and then their families are too important to you, and then you're 60 years of age and your husband drops dead with a heart attack. You have nothing. You don't have any career. You don't have any outside interest. You've given everything to the family, and now it's gone. What preparation do you have for that moment, Bonnie?
I'm sure that there's something the Lord has for me for that day. I don't know what it is yet, but I'm really looking forward to the excitement of retirement, so to speak, of being a homemaker, but I've not yet programmed it as to what it will be, because I'm going to be a whole different person in 10 years.
One of the most fulfilling things that we can do is to learn to give to others around us. There are so many hurting people all around us we can come in contact with every day. And if we learn to give of ourselves, not our money necessarily or material things, but giving of the inward part of us that cares and loves, then our time never runs out. We always have something that is meaningful.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And if there's time, I can recite an experience I had yesterday. A year ago, right after school was out, a student that I had for 3 years was with her grandmother in a car. They were broadsided by a 16-year-old boy who had been drinking in a van going 80 miles an hour. They were in a compact car. They were demolished. There wasn't hardly enough to pick up. This girl had been with her mother 3 years earlier, when her mother was hit by a man who had been drinking. Her mother was killed. Her mother and father were divorced. She came then into the guardianship of her grandmother and grandfather, who loved her, devoted themselves to her. Then a year ago yesterday, she and her grandmother were broadsided, and they were both killed. This grandfather then, in the period of time of 6 years, lost his only daughter, his wife, and his only grandchild. He is alone. I went to him a year ago when I heard of this, and I knew him because I had met them at open house. We had had a close relationship, and I said, I care. I just want you to know I care. There's not anything I can do. He took me into his house. He talked for over an hour. And we shared. And I told him that I knew I didn't have any answers. The only thing I knew I could give him was that I knew there was a God that loved. Yesterday, I was on my way home from taking my Brad to a calligraphy class in Arcadia. And I drove right by this man's house. And I thought, I ought to go in and see him. I didn't realize what the date was. And I thought, no, I really don't have time because Kim's expecting me back home. But then on my way back, I thought, I can't go by. I've got to go. So I swung in the driveway. I rang his doorbell. The look on that man's face when he saw me, I'll never get over, because he said, do you realize what today is? It was a year ago today that Sonia and my wife were killed. And I said, you know, the only way I can explain this is that this is part of God's direction. He's the one that gave me this impulse. I would never have known Sonia had I not been teaching that part-time. I mean, and I say that from the standpoint of using the gift that God had given me and had opened the door for me to use.
Now, Judy, you would then recommend that women, probably men too, be careful not to get in any kind of commitment of their time that would prevent that kind of giving, wouldn't you?
Whether we're working outside the home or we're working within the home, there are people all around us that need us. And as Christians,
We have something to give to the world. There are people who are hurting,
yes,
who are hungry for love, for a pat on the back, for saying, come to my house and have a cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. You know, I care about you. I mean, how can you not be fulfilled if you treat
And there will always
way.
Be a need for that kind of giving.
You never
It doesn't matter how old you are
right.
or what the situation is. That's an area where everybody can find employment. I want to express my appreciation to each of you for being here today. It's been a stimulating discussion, and I think we could go on for another week or two. It's important to try to summarize and pull all these thoughts together, but I'd need a computer to do that, and I don't think I can because there's been so many thoughts going in a number of different directions. I think I'm going to just give each of you an opportunity to take the last 60 seconds each and express what you'd like to say to the women who are listening, and maybe to their husbands as well. And Betty, again, we'll start with you.
Okay. I just want to say that I can fully sympathize with both the working woman and the non-working woman because I have been in both situations. My position right now is that I am extremely thankful to the Lord and to my husband that at this time, right now in my life, I am allowed to do what I feel is the right thing for me to do. And my aim, my goal, and I'm going to make this one, is that I can live up to all that is expected of me by my family and be to them what I feel that God's Word says that I am to be. And I just...
That's your highest priority.
That's it right now, and I'm glad.
Fantastic. Bonnie?
I agree 100% with Betty, and I think what everyone has said. First, most, your priorities. You know, if you can't have that, you can't have anything. God first, always.
God first and family next. All right.
Absolutely.
Judy?
I would say stay open before God. Be teachable. Keep your priorities straight with your family. Don't let any outside influence come over the needs of your family. Keep close to your husband. Love him. Understand him. Try to understand him anyway. Support him, whether you understand him or not. Be sensitive to your children. Always be available. We'll fail. We'll always fail sometime because we're human. But if the motivation is right, God helps us.
Cheryl?
First of all, to know God and to be the woman that he would have me to be. Secondly, to create an environment in my home so that my husband can be the man that God would have him be. Thirdly, to create an environment in my home so that my children can be the people that God would have them be. And fourthly, to be the friend to people so that they can be the people that God would have them to be.
I feel the emotion in your voice, Cheryl, and all of us do. And it's obviously an extremely important issue to you and to all women in this country, and especially Christian women, and that's why we devoted this time to it, because it's no small issue. I really feel the future of our country depends on the answer to these questions, because the family is that important to the country. So the emotion that you show at this time, I think, just grapples with what the significance of this issue is. And it is a spiritual matter, because God cares about that matter too. Linda, last comment.
Wow, it's difficult to follow such super comments. I guess my one thing that I would want to say to the working mothers is that they make sure that they go to God about it. Mm-hmm. And if it's a door that God has left open for them, then to go with it and let God use them, mm-hmm. And to stay in alignment so that God comes first, family second, and, of course, work third.
That's super. Gail Sigmund Freud summarized 30 years of psychoanalysis and study of the human race by saying, "What does a woman want?" And if he didn't settle that issue in 30 years, I doubt if we did it in this period of time, but it's sure been interesting to work on it. And let's do it again.
Well, Doctor, we've been concentrating our attention for 3 days now on this important matter of a career outside the home versus homemaking full-time for a woman. I'm sure you've got hundreds of thoughts on the issue going through your mind at this moment, not only on the subject itself, but on the comments that we've heard today during this roundtable discussion.
There are so many subjects that we need to discuss on Focus on the Family, and our interests and the letters that we get take us into so many areas that it's very unusual for us to give 3 days to a single subject, as we have with reference to the working woman this week. But I think it's that important, because women are being put into one of two camps, or they're putting themselves into one of two camps. Either they are identifying with the full-time homemaker and the responsibilities of raising children and being God's woman in the home, or, on the other hand, Christian women see themselves as having a divine calling to the work that they're doing. Many of them feel they're able to meet the needs of their families perhaps as well or better than they would be otherwise. Now, it hasn't been our purpose to say that one of these groups is right and the other one is wrong, although I think people who have followed my writings and this program already know that my bias is in the direction of the homemaker. Not to heap guilt on the backs of the working woman. She's had enough of that already, and in so many cases today, she wishes she could stay home, but simply can't afford to do so. And our purpose here has not been to point our finger at her and to make her feel worse about what is inevitable and what she feels she must do. So we're not here to condemn her, but there are two issues that I want to address in closing today that I think are very important, especially with reference to the role of the homemaker. And they're both referred to in the April issue of Ladies' Home Journal. It's entitled Women Versus Women, The New Cold War Between Housewives and Working Mothers and the Conflict That's Between Them. And one of the quotes is a quote itself of a woman who felt insulted by her working friends, and she's a homemaker, and this is what she said. There's an attitude among people, and especially among working women, that holding down a job is much more admirable. Almost like there's a moral obligation today for women to work. They don't see how staying home can be a fulfilling role. When these career women finally do have kids, they go right back to work. Frankly, I begin to wonder why they have children in the first place, if someone else is going to bring them up. Now, I want to comment on her first sentence. There's an attitude among people, and especially among working women, that holding down a job is much more admirable. I believe that's true, and it is especially true on college campuses today, where there is great pressure on female students to go into a career. And it hasn't been very long since I was counseling a young lady who had just graduated from college. She wasn't sure what she wanted to do, and she wanted to ask me some things about the man that she was going with. And we were just kind of talking, and then she kind of looked over her shoulder, and she looked back at me, and she said, can I tell you something very honestly? And I said, sure, Janie, you can say anything you want to. That's what you're here for. And she says, in almost a whisper, I don't really want a career at all. And I said, no kidding. She said, no, that's not what I want. I want to be a wife and mother. I said, Janie, why do you feel like you have to say it like that to me? Why do you almost say it like you're afraid to express it even in here? And she said, are you kidding me? The professors that I've had, the students that I went to school with, they'd laugh me out of the college if they'd hear me say that. That is an unacceptable position to take. No one identifies with the role of a wife and mother. And they'd ask me what in the world I was even doing in college anyway. And she felt great pressure to do something that she didn't want to do. I think that is very pervasive among the young today. It may be felt among those who are 35 and 40 and have already made their choices, but there is great pressure on young women to identify with a career today, and I think that's a great mistake. If they want a career, wonderful, take it. No one should tell them not to do it. If they don't want to get married, that's their business. If they don't want to have children, they don't have to have them. But don't force that decision down their throats, because the next generation of Americans depends on somebody propagating the race and devoting themselves to that task. And the homemaker's job must be preserved, and the dignity that's in it must be preserved. And that I do care about. And Gil, there's one other perspective that just must be addressed here at the close of this 3 days of discussion. And my thinking on it was stimulated again by the same article. Let me read the quote. At the heart of the dissension between the homemaker and the career woman is the question of how much mothering a child needs to develop as a happy, successful human being, an issue seldom raised among the devoted mothers of decades past, but which now occurs with increasing urgency. It is this issue, perhaps more than any other, that has divided women and which threatens to forestall their future growth as a united voice in the 80s. I absolutely agree with it. That is the issue. How much mothering does a child need? And Gil, I have very strong feelings about that one, because the research on that issue is very clear. At least it was clear before the emotion attached to this issue began to cloud the outcome of some of those studies.
There's a controversial statement, if ever I've heard one.
Well, I could, if we had time, explain what I'm talking about. I attended a conference in 1969 in Miami, University of Miami, and one right after another of the researchers that got up and spoke gave their data, described their studies, and the bottom line was, mother is on the hook. Mother is all important. There is no substitute for mother's involvement. And the final speaker of that three-day conference was Dr. Yuri Bronfenbrenner, whom I respect very highly as one of the foremost authorities on child development today. He's at Cornell University. And he summed it up, and that was his statement. The summarizing statement for the whole conference is the importance of mothers to the development of young children. Dr. Bronfenbrenner, however, was at a conference that I attended, the White House Conference on the Family, as a matter of fact, not too long ago. And at this conference, he kind of modified that stance. And since I was on the same platform with him, I asked him about it. And he said, well, we know that mothers are important, but we're looking at other issues now. And it looked to me like a cave-in to pressure. Maybe that's unfair, and I'm not charging him with biasing his data. But if you look at psychology today and reports that are coming out, all of a sudden the research findings seem to say what the women's movement wants to hear, and that is that children are really not all that dependent upon mother's involvement, and daycare centers do just about as well, and so on. I simply don't believe it. And the studies I've seen that make the most sense to me do not say it. In fact, I had a psychologist that came into my office at Children's Hospital one day. He was a psychologist for prisons in Arizona, and he told me that they did a study of the inmates in Arizona to find out what the common denominator was between the men who had gone wrong, those who had gotten into great difficulty and had broken the law and had been incarcerated. And they said that if you asked those men why they were where they are, they would blame it on poverty. They would say, we were poor and therefore I had to steal. He said they didn't find that. That was not the common denominator. The common element between those men, more than any other factor, was the absence of adult involvement in the lives of those little children when they were young. That their parents were gone, their parents were involved, the home life was chaotic, they were on the streets, they were with other children, they were raised by other children, involved with other children, but the parents were not involved in their lives. And I found that to be true in all of my work with people. So what I'm saying is, if you have to work as a mother, if you want to work as a mother, it's your business, do it. If you have children, then take steps to give those children not just quality time, but some quantity time too. And if it's impossible because of the pressures of your work to do that, you better take another look at that assignment.